Hi, I'm Cheryl. I'm a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater from Calgary. I'm really grateful to be part of this fellowship. I have been here with my, waving my white flag, totally surrendering that I was out of ideas. And that happened March 19th of 2015. So I have, and I've had abstinence actually since that day. So as of today, 1,138 days or 3.11 years, according to my trusted app, because I love technology and I've embraced it for a long time. So I'm just really grateful that there's something that I can use as part of my recovered state. So I have abstained from that date to this, from the foods of no choice, my drugs of no choice, which happen to be sugar, anything to do with sugar, any sweetener, because my body just says sweet. So it doesn't matter what it is or how I had chosen at one time to justify taking that in. But I'm a volume eater as well. I can eat anything, you know, it could be carrots or cucumbers or cauliflower. It doesn't really matter. Once I start something, I can't stop. And that is my dilemma. So I'm grateful to have found these rooms on that Thursday evening over 3 years ago. And I have released about 150 pounds and lose the weight, because losing it in my mind means that I'm looking to find it somewhere. So what I do is just say I released it. Be free, never to return. And at least today I can say that. So it is a very freeing thing. And if the physical recovery is only a part of it, but that is my admitting that I am powerless over not only the food, but also the situations that drive me to the food. All the crazy that's behind it all and whatnot. So I am just really grateful that there are people who actually have that understand my experience. And how it started was back, actually it was when my dad died. I was 11 years old and three kids. And, you know, my parents, I mean, I grew up in a very normal home, a little bit paramilitary, but that's okay. That's okay. Because I mean, from that, I learned great manners and to respect my elders and to say please and thank you and all of those wonderful things and to not be too cocky about things. So it was really good, although at times I felt I didn't have a voice. And in any event, I took on the responsibility when my dad died to be one of the pallbearers when one of my uncles wasn't present. And I was asked, and no one had to coerce me. I just did it. And from that day, I felt that I couldn't say no to anything. So that was one of my biggest character defects. And, you know, it did take a toll on me to the point that I really couldn't handle it without having something sweet. And I developed my love of sugar, of all things sugar, starting with umpteen teaspoons of sugar in a cup of tea. And they weren't the mugs, the 10-ounce mugs that you have these days. It's, you know, I progressed to eating contests with my sister. I progressed to, you know, just all of those wonderful things that we've all experienced. I could go on a food alone, but I won't do that necessarily here. But just know that while I was in high school, I ate like a normal human being, even though I was working at a fast food restaurant. It's unbelievable that that happened. But once I left to go to university, that's when things got really crazy. crazy for me, because there were all sorts of food combinations that I didn't even know existed, and I had to try them all. And of course, with the stresses of studying, it's like, well, yeah, you know, I have to have some brain food, so I'll go and get some brain food and bring it back to my dorm room and have that, and then do a little bit of work, and then, oh, I've got to, oh, it's lunchtime, I've got to go get more stuff. And I don't know how I managed to get through university, but I did. But then when I started to work, it progressed to eating in the car and all of those wonderful things and starting to squirrel away foods in my room because I was living at home. And I thought, you know what? I think it's time to leave the nest. I got my own place, and then it blew up even more. So it just kept on and on and on. And it was a really interesting thing. Back in 95, October 1995, at 282 pounds. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to go on my little old my Windows 95 computer with not a whole lot of memory. Actually, my cell phone has more memory than that computer did. And I looked up weight loss, and Overeaters Anonymous showed up in the results. Actually, I didn't Google it because Google wasn't really a thing then. It was more the Yahoo. But in any event, I used it, found OA, and walked into the rooms for the first time on October 30th of 1995. And it was a very large group of individuals. I think there were about 25, 30 people in that room. And I remember what I was wearing, and it was not pretty. It was like Holly Hobby 1995 style. And I was crying. I felt like I was home. Everyone was saying, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. Gave me a newcomer package. And I proceeded to lose the weight. And I say lose because that's exactly what I did, because I wasn't working the program of recovery that is talked about in the big book. I worked Cheryl's program because all I needed to do was lose weight. Thank you very much. The rest of my life was fine. So I don't know about airing my stuff. You know, I hear everybody talking about, oh, this happened and that happened, the other happened. I'm not going to share my business. That's the way I was thinking, because I didn't need to do that. I didn't need to be fixed. Nothing else was wrong with me. I just was eating too much. I just needed to shed some pounds, and that was it. So I did lose 120 pounds. And then the two meetings a week that I went to dwindled to one a week, dwindled to another week, etc. And then, abstinence is a tool, right? Tools you use when you need to use them. Boy, am I glad that that's changed, because abstinence is not a tool. It is an action. And I am so grateful that this is an action, being actually putting down the food, and being honest. I'm really glad that that's changed. The languaging changed. But that's the way I was thinking then. And that gave me an out. And so during all that time, before going in first time, I was going to the pay and ways and doing all of those things. And that worked for a little bit of time, but then it didn't, right? Because, again, I didn't need to be fixed. But once I left OA, back in 98, then things got crazy. Things got really crazy in terms of, it took its toll, and I hit my bottom or close to it when I went shopping with a friend of mine, because we were bound and determined to be healthy. Now, she is celiac, and I had a lot of food allergies, and I still have some because of, you know, abstaining from my drugs of no choice. A lot of those have disappeared, and boy, that is a massive gift for me. But in any event, we went shopping. We thought, okay, we're buying all these healthy foods. And then I said, do you need anything at the gluten-free bakery? Yeah, that's the disease speaking loud and clear, because this wasn't all about her. This was all about me, because I bought a blueberry pie to share with my husband. He didn't know until about 6 months ago that I had even bought that for him. So 2 weeks after that, I came into the program, and I really did all the things I didn't do the first time I was in these rooms. I got a sponsor. And that was really hard for me to do, to ask another to help me. And I had my eye on one individual and we were playing phone tag and it just wasn't clicking. And then this other individual just was just so eloquent. And I thought, that's the person I want to have sponsor me. She has what I want. And so I asked her, I just thought, just do it. And I had all this fear, but I did it. And it has absolutely helped me. And she is just a beautiful soul. And even though we are provinces apart right now, she is an anchor in my recovery. She's one of my anchors. I also have an alternate sponsor, and that has worked well for me when I'm not able to get in touch with my primary sponsor, or if she's going to be away for an extended period or what have you, then I can turn to my alternate sponsor for some assistance, because I have to have a plan B, because my disease is just waiting there. It's just waiting there. And I have to put as much distance between me and my disease. And that's where the God of my understanding comes in. Now, my higher power showed up actually while I was in these rooms the first time. And I really didn't understand it. But I thought, you know what? These people have something that I can't put my finger on, but I don't know about this God thing. I don't know. I'm not willing to concede that that's going to be helpful. But my higher power just gave me some little nudges, some pokes, if you will, for those that are, you know, operating in 2.0 mode. You know, just giving me these little messages. And with technology, for me anyway, is that I can easily get overwhelmed, especially knowing that as of now I have a lot of text messages. And sometimes that freaks me right out. And I'm not going to lie, that has cost me a couple of sponsees. And there was at one point where I had 8 people that I was sponsoring, which is another form of crazy for me, because again, my MO is that I want to help everybody, but I can't. And what good is it doing if I'm losing my mind over it, you know? And because that these things affect my recovery. So I had to get real with that. And so I now have 5, which is a lot more manageable. And for me anyway, and I have to also embrace the fact that people have different ways of staying connected. For me, I could easily isolate with technology. And this is why I choose to reach out a number of different ways. Just like when I coach and mentor people, you know, outside of the rooms, that, you know, everybody receives information in different ways. So I have to honor that. So, you know, it can't always be my way. Ha ha! How about that? Right? So those are things that I've learned about technology. And, you know, there are a lot of things that I'm acknowledging. I'm at a point in my life where, well, I went through surgery a little over a year ago, and it's a direct result of this disease, actually. And so I have no hardware. I had to really, really come to terms with that. And I had to mourn that loss, and I had to make my amends, actually, because I created that. I mean, I'm not saying that it's all my fault. Actually, it really isn't my fault, because I didn't know what I didn't know. But I had to own the fact that, you know, there were consequences to the actions that I took pre-recovery. So I'm fine with that now. But I'm also wondering about the, you know, the menopause pounds, so to speak. And it isn't a lot, and it isn't that I've changed anything that I'm doing. I'm still, you know, I have incorporated a whole lot into my physical recovery, which isn't obsessive or anything, because I can't stand exercise. I absolutely can't stand it. but I do it. It is a necessary thing for me at this stage of my life. But there's a lot that I'm learning and accepting. And I have to, as one of my clients stated, breathe and believe. And man, oh man, I have goosebumps right now as I talk about that. And I've thanked that client hugely for that, because that should be quite the bumper sticker. And it has really helped me stay sane. Using the tools has helped me stay sane. Being amongst all of you has helped me stay sane. And, you know, there have been a lot of things that have happened in my family life that have tested the waters. Food has not been on the radar through that, fortunately, because I'm dealing with life on life's terms, and is another major gift. I am just so grateful. There's just so much that I could say, so much more actually that I could say about this recovery, this recovered state that I'm in. It saved my life literally. And it's helped me to be a better person by embracing the person that I was, with all of the warts and wrinkles and everything else, and now sagging skin and, you know, bat wings, which someone lovingly said to me that are angel wings. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. That doesn't mean I'm going to give up my Batman t-shirt, just to let you know that. But I'm just really grateful for the God shots that I get from all of you, because it just really helps me peel back more onion layers, so to speak, and just learn more about myself as I continue to grow in my recovery. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you so much for sharing, for being a part of my recovery. Thank you.
If any of you have any questions, I'm just going to turn it back to Cheryl. Okay, thank you.
Hi, Cheryl. Hey, everybody. This is Leslie from Juneau. Thanks for sharing. I just wanted you to hear more about your higher power and how you stay connected.
It is a good question. Thank you very much for that, Leslie. Every morning, when my alarm goes off at the awful, actually it's not that awful, it's a very early hour, 5:15, because I have to grab my phone to turn it off. The one thing I do is, I create my food plan and I send it to my sponsor. Then I go through my chat with my higher power. So this is all before I get out of bed, other than getting the phone, I go back into bed. And so I say the serenity prayer. Actually, I'll just say exactly what I say. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. This is your show, not mine. God, thank you for the gift of abstinence today, and for the gift of abstinence you have presented to me and that I've so gratefully accepted since March 19th, 2015. I am open and willing to take direction from you today, because this is your show, not mine. Whatever character defects are still kicking around, please remove them, because they no longer serve me. If there's someone I am able to assist today, please let me know in a way I am able to understand. And then sometimes I share the things that I'm grateful for, whether it's my husband, my family, this program, you know, the fact that my knees don't ache anymore, whatever it happens to be on that day. And then I get out of bed and start my day. Because for me, the clearest thoughts are the ones that I have when I first wake up. It's so easy for me to get into that chatter and have everything come at me. Okay, I've got to do this at work. I've got to call this person. I've got to do that, etc. So I want to make sure that I am grounded at the start of every day. So this is what I do before I even get out of bed. And anytime there are things that are more challenging through the day that surface, then I once again say the serenity prayer. And actually, I did that today because there was a client who had just started with me and was very challenging in a workshop environment and just pushing and pushing and pushing. And the me of old would have actually just taken it, and then I would have been so, so resentful. But at the time that it was happening, I just said the serenity prayer because I needed to be grounded. I needed to be forever. I just needed to know how I could help this person. And what happened was, even though I was shaking and I knew I was angry, I had a smile on my face, and I just addressed things in a calmer manner, even though I was thinking, man, I don't know how I'm going to help you. But, you know, it was just done in a way to assert the fact that as a mentor, and it was interesting, my mentor was chatting at my ear saying, remember, you, when you are in front of the room, are the expert. So that's what was needed. And some, as I said, my higher power speaks to me when I am open to that. And so these are the ways that I do that. And at the end of the day, I again have a review. And this is all parts of steps 10 and 11 process. Just taking a look, much like one would do if one were in HR, you had an interview, or, you know, you had to do a debrief. You know, what worked, what didn't work, what can you do differently next time? I always think in terms of interview questions, because that's just what I do. And it just helped me to go to bed knowing that, okay, there's another day that I've learned something from and I can take into the next day. So that's what I do to stay connected. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. This is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
I have a question too. I'm also abstinent from sugar just for pre-diabetes reasons. And so I really appreciated your share. And I wondered, do you, like, in the afternoon, I start kind of thinking, okay, what is my treat? Because I guess I was in a pattern before OA of having something sweet and then having that crash, you know, having a huge handful of something and then getting a crash, energy crash. And so now I think I mentally still want that. And I just wondered if you could address how you handle that, or if maybe it's gone away. Maybe you don't have that anymore.
That's a really good question. Thanks for mentioning that, Debbie. When I first became abstinent, actually I was snacking all the time. And snacking isn't part of what I do today, because a snack is just another meal. But that was a hard thing to get rid of at first. So I went from having something all the time to three meals a day, nothing in between, and doing it with no sugar, and eating my meals off of a salad plate. Because I know for me, plates are like purses. The bigger they are, the more I put on them. And this is why a lot of the times when I'm going out, I carry a small purse. So in any event, the first 2.5 weeks, I was like, this is easy. This is really easy. And then the nausea and the migraines started. I was in full-on withdrawal. And I still have on my phone a 23-minute rant on Good Friday, and it was Good Friday, but it was the worst Friday ever had in my life. And I listen to that every now and again, because I just wanted to hop in the car and drive the one block to go to a convenience store to get my gummy bears. That's all I wanted. But it took me 3 weeks. You know, it was, but the 3 weeks that I went through the withdrawals, I was actually reaching out to my sponsor. I reached out to a number of people in the rooms. I listened to I don't know how many podcasts. I sent text messages to people. I I did a lot of reading. There was just so much that I did. And then I had to think, well, what, you know, and even during the course of a work day, I would just send out an SOS to, and I would say, I'm feeling really crabby. I'm really wanting some gummy bears or some almonds and all that other stuff. And my sponsor or whomever else I spoke to would walk me off the, you know, they'd walk me away from the ledge. So that was really helpful. The tools were the thing that really helped me. And recording some of my rants was really helpful. Actually, they're quite comical when I think of it. But at the same time, I have to just send blessings to that person because I don't ever want to forget where I came from, because the minute I do, I am in trouble. And that's when my disease is going to come in there and say, you don't need them. So, you know, anytime my disease starts talking, I find a way to put God into that space because I want to keep that distance between me and my disease. So I really work the program that much harder, even though my brain is saying, don't do it. Because honestly, the one thing I didn't do was like, whoo, I'm going to come into these rooms. That's the one thing that I can say didn't happen. So that's what I did. I just used the tools. Anytime I have those feelings, and why did they come up? That's the halt, right? Am I really hungry? No, you just ate an hour ago. So you're not hungry. Okay, are you angry? Maybe. Are you lonely? Yeah, it could be. A lot of times for me, it's just I'm tired. And I think of all the times that I'm tired, but I'm going to the fridge to get something. Okay, so, okay, no one said I was hungry. I just said I was tired. That means go to bed. Just those things that are just so logical for people who can eat normally. But I have to eat responsibly. And if that means making a phone call to understand what that looks like, then that's what I've got to do.
Could I just ask, so you don't say I need a treat and then have something that's a certain treat?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because that's my, for me, it's my disease saying, please, you deserve it. Please, can I have some more? No, it's not an option. I mean, I think of my disease as a little two-year-old. I want to do this. I don't want to do that. Well, I don't know. Do you give a two-year-old everything they ask for?
No.
So I'm not gonna listen. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, I get it. So that's how I treat it.
Cheryl, so someone in one of my meetings said that when she starts out her meal, she looks at the plate and she says, this is enough food, and when I'm finished with this plate, I'm gonna be disappointed. And that's helped me, because usually I'm thinking before the meal is even over of what I'm going to eat as my quote unquote treat. And so do you use anything like that? Or do you just realize when that plate of food's gone, you're done?
That's a good question. Actually, I just know that is what I know. I always am thinking, well, what would a normal eater eat? So I take a look at what a normal person would eat, and I know I look at my husband as an example, although he was eating normal for him, but he realized that wasn't helping him either, so he scaled back. A lot of times he has this, his eyes are bigger than his stomach, so he would have everything piled on his plate, and I never understood how he would leave two-thirds of it and say he's full. I just never got it. But I know for me, okay, that's seemingly what a normal person would eat. So I would take a look at that third, put it on my plate, and then I transfer it onto a larger plate. Yeah, I guess that is what a normal person would eat. And I would know that no seconds or thirds or fifths, that is it. Plus a dessert, which is usually, and dessert I use the term loosely, it's one piece of fruit. or 1 cup of chopped stuff. But that's me, because this is the way I measure my food. That's the only way I do it. So once I have that meal, the kitchen is closed. So that's the way I register it. If I were in a restaurant, I certainly wouldn't be saying, oh, can I have some more? No, I wouldn't be saying that. Kitchen would be closed, right? Because that's the way I was. I would eat normally when I was out, but then I'd have to stop at 10,000 places on the way home. That was before. But normal eaters have what they have. That is it. Kitchen closed. So that's the way I think. And anything else that other people do, they do that once in a while. I can't do that once in a while because I have lost the privilege of doing, of acting in that way. So I can't eat food responsibly. And there was another speaker that actually said, you know, people say, you know, when you're consuming alcohol, you drink responsibly. No one says that about food. Eat responsibly. No one says that, but that's what I have to do in order to stay recovered. So that's how I do it.
Ooh. Cheryl, are you hungry most of the time or not?
No, I am not. That's a good question. No, I'm not. At all. As I said, I once at 3 weeks after Good Friday or the day before Good Friday happened, I was in a place of neutrality. I don't get hungry. If I miss a mealtime or it's going a little bit before that, or sorry, after that, I start getting hangry. And that's not a good place for me to be either. So I always have a plan B when I'm going out. You know, if I'm going to someone's house or what have you, then what I do is I make sure that I'm going to be able to have whatever it is they're serving. A lot of times they do know that I have allergies, and that's how I position it, that I have allergies. Because I do have a shellfish allergy, my throat will close up. So people understand the allergy concept. So I tell people that I have an allergy to sugar. Oh, I've never heard about anybody having an allergy to sugar. I said, yeah, it makes my butt swell. So, and then they leave me alone because they're not going to mess with an allergy, right? So, but no, I don't get hungry. And if I have that weird feeling in my stomach area, I have to think, okay, is it really hungry? Is it really being hungry? Or is there something else going on? And that's when I have to really think about what's going on around me. And sometimes I've got to talk that out. So what I may feel is hunger may be something else entirely. But that's where the tools come in.
Hey, Cheryl. Thank you so much for your story. I was wondering, how did you change, like, how did you flip the script when you came to OA the second time when you released the weight versus losing the weight? You talked a little bit about you got a sponsor. What happened? Like, what was your aha moment in this program? And what were the big things that you changed to see your recovery?
I had to admit that not only that I was powerless over the food and that my life was getting crazy as a result of that, trying to keep the lid on all of the pots and whatnot as they were all ready to boil over at the same time, I had to let go of the fact that I could do this by myself, right? And actually it was in one of the questions my sponsor had asked me. And I had to read, I can't remember what part of the big book, and I apologize for that, but it was either in the big book or the OA 12 and 12. And I had to answer the following question: how has your reliance on your higher power led you, or your dependence on your higher power led to greater independence? And that was actually the one question that really popped in my brain. Because when I think about it, over the years, I've thought, I am staunchly independent. Staunchly independent. I don't need anyone's help. I can do this by myself. I'm an educated woman. I can do this. So when I really needed the help, I couldn't, because I should be able to do this myself. So really, I was relying on myself, and I can't help myself. Or at least I couldn't. I couldn't rely on myself to get me out of that situation, whatever it happened to be. But by just letting go and letting my higher power do their thing, then it just made things a lot easier. I had clarity. I was able to actually see what needed to be done and just do it. Because the worst thing that happens is that nothing happens, right? And then I'm stuck with this mess that keeps compounding itself, rather than acknowledging that there are some things that I need to do and just to get it done. So I had to trust the process. That was the biggest piece for me. So I had to concede that I had to depend on something outside of myself in order to become independent. There is something that I read in some of our literature. Actually, I'm paraphrasing it, actually, and it said, I want to be a doctor, but I don't want to become a doctor, right? I want the title, but not the work. So I really had to just realize that I had to trust the process and trust that other people in these rooms who are God by my higher power by proxy, if you will, to be able to lead me in a direction that's going to give me more independence.
I'm Donna, compulsive overeater. You mentioned that you've been absent since you came into program. Mm-hmm. So at what point did you realize that it was time to start sponsoring? Because you said you had 8 sponsors at one time and now you have 5. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people get really scared to sponsor. Mm-hmm. So how did you know you were ready?
Good question. I didn't know. My sponsor knew. At about the 2-month mark, she said, I think you're ready to sponsor now. I'm like, ooh, I don't know about that. But it was interesting. There was a newcomer in the room, and she came into the program 2 months after I did. And we were introduced, and I know she felt like she was, you know, hooking up with me under duress. But, you know, we're good friends now, which is awesome. I was thrown into it. And sometimes that's what has to happen, because my disease is like, no, you don't need to do that. You don't need to help anybody out. You know, look after yourself. Look after number one, all that stuff. But I was scared. At the bottom of it was fear, right? And so I sponsored this woman, and that was fine. And then another newcomer came in, and I sponsored her for a little while, and then that didn't last. And I hope she's doing okay wherever she is. And then others have come in, shifted, changed. I was fired as a sponsor. And I had to talk to my sponsor to get over the fact that it really wasn't personal. And the thing is that it wasn't about me sponsoring perfectly. All it is about me sharing my experience, because that's all I've got. And I have to remember that there's so much program that comes out in the work I do outside of these rooms. And actually, someone actually said, you know, this feels like a 12-step program. And I'm like, wow, okay. It was very interesting. But anyways, getting back to the sponsorship, I did feel like especially when sometimes in the rooms, you know, there's a newcomer in the room and, okay, who is available to be a sponsor? Crickets in the room. Okay, I have 6 already, but okay. So those are things that's me though. That's me feeling that I've got to pipe up when no one else is. And it's not my job to save the world, because in trying to save 8 people, 10 people, whatever that looks like, I'm killing myself. So I had to take responsibility even for the, you know, who I sponsor or how sponsoring looks for me. So yeah, I was just thrown into the fire. Sometimes you just got to do it. You know, there's a tagline by a company and we all know, just do it. They don't say, I believe you should just do it, or I think I can just do it. It just says, just do it, right? Worst thing that happens is that you trip a few times, but you pick yourself up and you dust yourself off and you just keep on going.
So I want to thank everybody for being on the Skype call this evening and all the people here in the rooms. Thank you. We're going to close. Would you join us with I put my hand in yours?
I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We're all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it.